listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Dr. Melody Fox right here on LA Talk Radio.
And welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I am your co-host, Dr. Melody Fox, and our other co-host, Alan Cardoza, unfortunately, had some work to do today, but he'll be listening, I'm sure, and he'll be back with us next week. But each week, we will bring you guests that can inspire, educate, and entertain you while bringing answers and options to raising children today in our constantly changing future. And our topic today is about autism. Autism on how to bring a child from nonverbal to no longer qualifying for services. And our guest today will be Rhonda Spellman. She is an award-winning author, professional speaker, autism advocate, and a coach. And she first became a published author at the age of 17, has been in the writing field ever since. And her third published book, A Journey Home from Autism, was released in 2010. And based on her book and research, she has taught over 10,000 adults and another 6,000 children. And she has won many awards and nominations into the who's who. And her mission to reach, teach, and inspire those with special abilities and the adults that love them. And welcome to Answers for the Family, Rhonda. We're so thrilled to have you here today.
Well, thank you. I should be sure, though, I should clarify, am I here to entertain or educate?
How about a little of both?
Oh, good. Okay. Well, thank you for having me.
Sure. Well, autism is something that you're hearing a lot of in the news a lot lately. When were you first aware of autism?
Well, that's a really great question. You know, it's kind of funny. You remember those moments. For me, I really think it was Rain Man, to be honest with you. And Rain Man epitomized autism in my mind. And I didn't immediately connect with him or with the movie because I didn't know anyone personally that had autism, or at least I didn't think I did at that time. And it was something I looked back on when I was directly affected by autism, in the case with my son. And yet Rain Man is not the picture of autism, as most people unfortunately are not aware of. People with the Rain Man syndrome, if you will, which is a form of autism known as savants, mm-hmm. That's the rarest form of autism. And autism, I guess my awareness now is so much different than it was back then, but I think Rain Man would be my first real connection.
Well, you mentioned that savants are the most rare forms. What are some of the different degrees of autism? Because I know there is a whole spectrum of degrees.
Oh, and spectrum is the word. I remember the very first doctor that we saw at Children's Hospital, she told me, your son fits into the autistic spectrum disorder. And, you know, I just heard autism. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I really started digging deeper and deeper that I started learning about all the different spectrum disorders. And it ranges from what is called classic autism, which is considered to be the low end of the spectrum. IQs are generally lower. They are generally diagnosed sooner, and they generally get worse. All of those things, I say generally, because there's a lot of exceptions to the rule. Have you heard of Temple Grandin?
Yes.
Does that name ring bell? Okay, well, Temple Grandin was diagnosed with classic autism. She didn't speak. She yelled. She didn't fit into any, quote-unquote, normal growth patterns, and yet she broke the mold, and she's this phenomenal person. And then there's the other end of the spectrum known as Asperger's syndrome. Mm-hmm. Now, Asperger's syndrome, in my opinion, isn't even really autism. It is a brilliant way of thinking differently, and I do believe that it will eventually be standing all on its own. But people with Asperger's syndrome do have some things that are in the same categories with autism. For example, they really struggle with communication. They really struggle with social settings. They really struggle with a lot of sensory issues. Like you might see a child covering his ears because of the noise. That's all the way across the board, from whether it's classic autism to varying degrees of autism and to the other end of the spectrum with Asperger's syndrome.
Mm-hmm. Well, what you talked about your son. What first caused you to believe that your son had some form of autism?
Oh, my goodness, that's a tough question. You know, I really didn't want to believe that he did because I was so afraid of it. But because of my research, I mean, literally every night I'd put the kids to bed and I'd get on the computer and I was researching like all night. And every symptom, every characteristic that he had, which included the meltdowns, included for him the inability to speak. He didn't talk for 2.5 years. I was MUB. I mean, he didn't talk right. He went from talking perfectly fine to not being able to form his words. And then once he did learn to talk again, it was in a very strange monotone, and it was only about dinosaurs or very certain, very specific things. He lined up his toys. He refused to look at me in the eye. He'd run if I got the camera out. He was deathly afraid of the camera. There was just all of these things that added up into what is known as an autism kind of a spec sheet, if you will. He basically had 9 out of 9.
Wow.
And, 14 out of 14 to be more specific. But it was pretty tough. It was pretty tough because that scenario or that thing, if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, well, he was quacking pretty clearly. And it was tough.
And
it was tough. And, you know, you don't want to believe it, though, even though it's very clear.
Well, I was going to ask you, when you first heard about it, do you feel like you're in denial? You know, you're going, no, not my son, or, okay, maybe it is, and what can I do about it? Were you fearful or scared, or what was your thought process on that?
Oh, I was all of the above, and it's funny, you know, I think we all go through these phases. I went through the anger phase. I went through kind of a depression phase where it was like mourning my child.
Mm-hmm.
I went through denial. Oh, for sure, he was just going to outgrow this. I had a new baby, and he was reacting to the new baby. It was allergies. It was, I remember family members, even my own mother, telling me that she was just sure that this was a phase he was going to outgrow, and don't get overly alarmed, and don't make it into something bigger than it is. It's not autism, you know, and it just the word autism was causing such fear.
Right.
And not just their hearts, but my own too, because we didn't really understand what it was. And, you know, now that I do understand what it is, it's believe me, it's not something to be afraid of.
Well, that's really nice that you said that, because I think it helped normalize it for a lot of people. I was at a conference recently, and it surprised the heck out of me when they said 1 in 86 people have some form of autism on the autistic spectrum disorder chart. That is a lot of people. And so I imagine, I'm sure I deal with a lot of high-functioning autistic children in the schools and even adults that come into my practice, but sometimes you wouldn't even know it. But I think it's just so prevalent, and I think people see, you know, the A word, autistic, kind of like people would see the C word, cancer. It's something to fear. So for you to normalize it and know that it's not necessarily something to fear, it's something that you could probably embrace and find the strengths in the child or the adult and help bring that forth. Now, there's been a lot of controversy about vaccines and vaccinations and that it causes autism, and I've heard it doesn't, and then I hear it does from fear-based. And what are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's kind of an interesting perspective. I don't want to run after Big Pharma. I mean, I did. I truly did for a while because my son was a perfectly normal, above-average child before he received his MMR, which stands for mumps, measles, rubella.
Mm-hmm.
And when children receive this mumps, measles, rubella vaccine, they receive the equivalent of 3 live viruses with all kinds of really nasty ingredients at one time.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is their immune systems, little children have underdeveloped immune systems, and if they have any kind of susceptibilities or weaknesses at all, they can severely react to an immunization. And the toxins in these immunizations are everything from heavy metals to formaldehyde to aborted human fetus cell culture to aluminum. I mean, the list would really, really scare you, that are put into our children's bloodstreams. So what happens is if they are susceptible to react to these toxins, the body becomes confused, if you will. The immune system becomes confused, and the immune system begins to attack itself. Mm-hmm. And that is what happened to my son. Within 2 hours after he received the NMR, he had a temperature of 105. That is considered to be a severe reaction to an immunization. And even on the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control site, they will state right on there, if you have a severe reaction, and they have a whole list of things, and he had a whole bunch of them, that you should never take another immunization. But does anyone ever tell you this? The doctors don't tell you this, and I don't think they know, nothing against doctors, but when I was on the phone with my doctor saying, hey, my son is practically having a convulsion. He can't hold his head up straight. He's projectile vomiting. He's got a temperature of 105. What in the world do I do? I think I'm going to take him to the hospital. And like, oh, no. He should be fine. Give it 72 hours.
Wow, that's a long time to watch your child in such pain and agony.
Oh, it's horrible. I mean, you have no idea what that's like until you've been through it. And what I can tell you, at this point, I have well over 10,000 logged hours of research. What I can tell you from personal experience, from talking with thousands of people, from all my research, everything all combined, is it's not just the immunizations. Yes, I think immunizations contribute, but it's only one of the three contributing factors. In my opinion, it all started with the biomedical toxins in the world. There are billions of known neurotoxins dumped into our air and our water and our plants, and it's just absolutely unbelievable. And those toxins go into our body, and most of them being neurotoxins and or heavy metals, our body is unable to fully process these items going into our system, so they're stored. Isn't that lovely? Don't you love knowing that? They're stored in our liver, our brain, our lungs, all of our major organs. And this begins to cause some problems, especially if it's in our liver, because the liver is what's supposed to flush all of these toxins out. Mm-hmm. Well, if the liver's full of toxins, how is it going to flush more toxins out? You know what I'm saying? And so what happens is the immune system starts overreacting in the form of an autoimmune disorder where it's attacking itself, or underreacting. Either way, you're in trouble.
Right.
And so we go to the doctor. Oh, we're sick. Let's go to the doctor. Doctors prescribe pills to suppress symptoms. Isn't that kind of an interesting thing? And when you suppress the symptoms, you're not curing the illness. You're not healing the person, but you're suppressing the symptoms so that you feel better. But it's a short-term fix. It's like putting a Band-Aid on a broken bone. And so you can see where that's going. And
sure.
Then the third thing that happens is your parents had autoimmune disorders and their grandparents had autoimmune disorders, and each generation passes on another weak link. And by the time, and you can look back on this and look at every single generation, the levels of sickness, the levels of autoimmune disorders, they're on the rise. And so it's the three things together. So with my son, he had some weaknesses from both sides of his family, and the medical toxins and the immunizations are what pushed him over the edge.
So he had a predisposition towards it, and then that was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back that took him over the edge.
Exactly.
His body to react. Well, I'm so sorry that happened, but, you know, it just seems like I don't want to put any fear about using vaccines, too, because it does work for a lot of people, but people who are susceptible or have that predisposition, unfortunately, like your son's, it does take them over that edge.
Right. I mean, I'm not trying to tell anybody, you know, don't ever vaccine, you know, again, don't ever take a vaccination, but know what's in them.
Right.
You know, like flu vaccinations have the maximum allowable amount of methylmercury, which is a neurotoxin. And, you know, I mean, you should really know what's in an immunization before you allow it in your body. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the thing that I really focus on is education. You know, you may not react to it. You may be just fine. Mm-hmm. But you may be like a gal that I've been helping now for over a year. She never reacted to an immunization until one that she took, till a flu shot that she took at 21. After that flu shot, she ended up in ICU. And it had, because of that mercury year after year storing up, mm-hmm. I mean, she almost died. And she's now doing much better, but we focused on healing her immune system.
And that's great.
But it's a tough deal.
It is a tough deal. And I want to get back to the book a little bit, The Journey Home from Autism. And mm-hmm. unfortunately, I didn't have a chance to read it before today, but I do plan on getting it and reading it. But I'd like for you to explain a little bit of what you talk about in your Journey Home from Autism.
Well, I really talk about everything. To be perfectly honest with you, I start out the book with Tanner's reaction to the MMR, and I go through everything we did, the good, the bad, and the not so good, to try and bring him back home from this nonverbal world that he was in. I like to say that he was in this invisible box with no key because he could shut out everything. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have a clue what was going on. And through the research, through all of these seminars I went to over 400, some online, some teleseminars, but from 2001 to 2008, I was on a nonstop warp speed drive to learn as much as I could. And I cover all of that in my book. I cover the recipes I created for him, created a game that taught him to talk again, and I cover the things that we've discovered. I say we discovered because my son was just right there. I mean, he was kind of like my little lab rat, mm-hmm. Poor kid, because I was dead set he was going to have all of these supplements to detoxify his body and cleanse his body and help him to absorb the minerals and on and on, but I couldn't find anything that lasted very long or that helped him very long until much later, until 2008. But it was a tough deal, and I just cover all of that so that people can see that what I did might help them. I mean, every child's so different. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm giving them all the information on what we did, why it worked, why it didn't, and giving people as many tools as I possibly can, because I really and truly believe that I believe in the pay it forward method. I help a lot of people as much as I possibly can, because I'm telling you what, I can't tell you how many times, and this has probably happened to you too, you know, where you help the little old lady trying to get her groceries into her car, and 3 miles down the road, your car breaks down, and who is it that comes by and helps you? Her son. Mm-hmm. You know, it's that kind of paying it forward kind of thing, and I look at that with autism because I think that these people are here to teach us.
And I think being able to teach and share your experiences really does provide information. And I think, like yourself as a mother who has a child with a child in the autism spectrum disorder or anything going on with them, you want the knowledge. You want to know everything you possibly can in order to help your child. And I think it's wonderful when somebody who's been through this can share their experiences with somebody else, because it also helps normalize it for other families and other parents.
Oh, you hit the nail on the head there. I mean, normalizing it is exactly it. You know, because once you understand how they think, then you realize that they're not so different from us. They're just a little more analytical, and most of them about, you know, 50 points higher on the IQ level. I mean, my son has an IQ of 170.
Wow.
I mean, if you can imagine, yeah, it's pretty pretty wild. He wrote a report real recently, and I've shared it with several of my really close friends about the aerodynamics of planes and comparing them to bird wings and the theory of lift and, you know, stuff that I hate to, like, dumb myself down, but I really don't get it.
And how old is your son now? How old is he
Pardon
now?
Pardon me?
How old is he now?
He's 11. And last year he did a science fair project, how to replace fossil fuel with algae fuel. Holy cow.
Well, he's going to help change
America.
He's going to help change the world when he grows up, isn't he? If not along the way.
Yes, exactly. And it's a real beautiful thing, you know, but our job is to give these people an opportunity to change the world. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like Isaac Newton said, we need to build more bridges and less walls. And I take that quite literally. I believe that the walls that are built around our kids in schools, because the schools don't understand or the teachers don't understand or, you know, whatever, is detrimental to everybody, not just the child.
Oh, absolutely. And you talk about building bridges. I keep thinking of the social development or sometimes the lack of with autistic children, that lack of being able to connect with another person in social situations. How has your son developed in that area, and or was it ever an issue for him?
Oh, it was an issue. And it's still a little bit of an issue, but not like it used to be. For example, I can remember when he was about 3 years old and we were at this mom's group, and all the little kids, you know, they were told to sit in this great big circle, and somebody was chosen as an original duck, you know, and they run around the outside of the circle, duck, 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 goose. You know, somebody would hit another child, tap him on the top of the head and holler, goose. Well, when he got tapped on the head, he just sat there, and he just looked around, and he did not get that he was supposed to jump up and run around. Yeah, he saw the other kids doing it, but it didn't make any logical sense to him. Mm-hmm. And because it didn't make any sense to him, I guess, I mean, it's really hard to know for sure, he just decided he wasn't going to do it, so he just continued to sit there. And he kind of ostracized himself a little bit in that particular scenario. But the social development has really come a long, long, long way, mainly because we play, you know, a lot of games. I taught him how to pretend with a writing exercise. He wrote his first book at 5. And we used to go to the zoo every week, and we'd name all the animals. The one particular group of animals, this wild dog, had 13 babies. We named all 13 of them. And we decided that each one of the 13 was going to be adventurous in one way or the other. One was going to go live with the monkeys, and one was going to do this and that and the other. Mm-hmm. And in this pretending was an amazing thing, but then it kind of backfired in a way, too, because he's really dead set on everything happened to be nonfiction. You know, the little wild dogs couldn't really do that because it didn't make logical sense. They could have gotten eaten, or they would have eaten, or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And so you have to be real careful with how you teach the social aspects. You want to teach them in such a way that they can accept themselves and kind of loosen up, because they don't really ever fully get the nonverbal cues. They don't ever fully get the idioms and our excessive use of adjectives. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really doesn't do anything for them. I mean, we think we need to do that, but they would be a lot happier if we could just cut to the chase.
Right.
And I think, you probably know a couple people like that.
Oh, sure. Probably more than I like to think. But actually, I tend to be that way too a bit. But, you know, just bottom line it, cut to the chase, and let's just get to
the point.
That's a
sign of intelligence.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that. But you're talking about, like, the play therapy. I know it's really important to truly engage with, you know, children of all shapes and levels of whatever they're going through, but especially with the autistic children, to really help them learn how to share and pretend and role modeling and really engaging in that. And I think it's quite interesting that, you know, even with the pretending of the cubs.
And you know, I've learned over the years that there's one real specific goal, and that is to teach them to become an expert at something, whether it is building Legos or cooking or gardening or writing or, you know, becoming a ornithologist. My 9-year-old is truly an ornithologist at this point. And anybody listening's probably run into the computer, and I'll save you the time. An ornithologist is the study of birds. And no, my 9-year-old is not on the spectrum, but he is a very competitive child. And because Tanner is so amazing at so many things, I think in part Oliver is going to be amazing too. And of course they both are. But teaching a child on the spectrum, it's more important for them really than for anybody else to give them that confidence. They are an expert. And when they are an expert, they accept themselves. I don't think anybody really has any idea how hard it is for them, mm-hmm. you know, because they're like an alien.
Well,
and you know, it's tough.
Well, and when you're around a bunch of other kids and you're not interacting with them on that social level, you're kind of standing, you know, in the crowd with like a wart on your nose. You kind of get picked on sometimes mm-hmm. for not being one of the group, being able to play and interact. So if they're an expert on something, then they can show off their expertise and the other kids could be in, oh, wow, that's really cool. You know that.
Yeah, well, you know, look at Anthony Hopkins, for example. This amazing actor. I don't want to like start throwing labels out there, but he, from his own admission, didn't fit in when he was a kid. Mm-hmm. He was picked on. He was, you know, all of these things, and so he took it upon himself that he was going to become an expert. And by golly, he's got my vote. I mean, I think he's a fabulous actor. And if we can do that for our kids, you know, when they're winning, we're all winning.
Absolutely. And to give them a gift of that comes with their natural ability is something nobody else has but them. And that
right.
builds their self-confidence, and they could go out in the world and become really, really good on that. And at this moment, we're going to go ahead and take a break. And we are Answers for the Family talking to Rhonda Spillman, who wrote a wonderful book called The Journey Home from Autism. And we'll be right back with her in just a moment. So stand by.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back to Answers for the Family. I'm Dr. Melody Fox, sitting in today for Alan Cardoza, our co-host, who unfortunately is not with us today, but who is with us today is our exciting guest, Rhonda Spillman, who wrote the book A Journey Home from Autism. She has over 10,000 hours of research talking with adults and children, and her mission to reach, teach, and inspire those with special abilities and the adults who love them. Well, welcome back, Rhonda. And before we went to a quick break, we were talking about, you know, building up self-esteem and giving the children something really good. Teach them to be an expert in something. Now, what areas for your child, Tanner, are you teaching him, or have you discovered what his specialty is going to be yet?
Well, it's kind of funny. After teaching him to pretend, using a method that I now call the right story, I helped him to write a complete book, again, when he was only 5. And this writing has really given him an opening into creativity and just this beautiful, beautiful way of expressing himself. And thus far, he's written 4 books, and they're really, really good. And I keep saying every year that, yeah, I'm going to get those published. Well, now Oliver has written one that is probably going to be the first one I'm going to get published, because it is absolutely, I can't even tell you about it without getting teared up, because it's so good. And it's about having a brother with Asperger's syndrome, and what's really cool and what's really annoying, you know, only a 9-year-old could tell you. But the other things with Tanner is he is very much this beautiful-minded child who recently said that he loves playing this one particular video game called Flight. And the reason he likes to play Flight is because he doesn't have to compete with anybody else, and he doesn't want anybody else to feel bad. And I'm just thinking, oh my gosh, and my 9-year-old going, oh, but I'm better than you. I can beat you. You know, and it's just a real different way of looking at things. And his whole persona is about helping the world. And I really and truly do believe he most likely is going to create algae fuel at some point. And he pretty much has it figured out. And he also is very, very, very interested in proving flight for people. And one of his key things is he believes that we need to have better flight and faster flight so that we can get to other planets in our lifetime, not, you know, 100 generations past us. Whether or not that'll ever happen and whether he'll be involved with that or not is, you know, between him and God. You know, I can't even add to that, but he has a very vast interest in areas that are pretty much all nonfiction. He wants everything to be truthful.
Well, and that's normal, I think, with the disorder, too, is they're very truthful, they're in the moment, and they're factual.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to think outside the box sometimes, and that's where the play therapy really comes into play. But I was curious, too, because you said he was nonverbal, and he is somewhat verbal now, and you were teaching him to talk again. How did you do that? You said you had a game.
Well, it's kind of funny, you know, back in retrospect, I remember when he was nonverbal, you know, for the 2.5 years, you know, and I prayed and prayed and prayed, did everything I could, and finally I created this game, and it was kind of one of those, the light bulb popping above your head kind of moments, and it started out real simply. I had this huge book, this 3-foot-tall book that we called the Big Tiger Book, and on the outside of this book was, of course, this big tiger, and because he refused, or at least I thought, refused to talk, I just started playing this little game with him, and I said, Tanner, I said, we're going to have lunch. Do you want a ham sandwich or a peanut butter and jelly sandwich? And he wouldn't even turn, you know, wouldn't even turn his head to look at me, wouldn't even acknowledge that I was talking to him. And so I'd go and get right in front of his face, and I'd say it again. And typically for parents who don't get what's going on with them, and I didn't at that time, I'd say it a little bit louder. And then a little bit louder, and I'd tap him on the shoulder, and I did all of these things to try and break through to what I called the invisible box. And ultimately, it you know, it just wasn't working. And so I walked away and saw that book, and I was just like, Lord, I need a better idea than the one I've got. And I just got this idea, and I said, Tanner, we're going to have warthog sandwiches for lunch today. And you should have seen him turn around. He looked at me, and then he said warthog, but he didn't say it correctly. He said it in his own kind of – everything ended in an ub. Like I was mub, and it was wormug or wormubs or just this really strange creative language. And coincidentally, a couple of years later, after he was talking really well, I asked him one time, I said, honey, do you remember when you used to talk funny? He says, oh, yeah. He says, that was clappish. That was my language that I made up. Whoa. I mean, you could have blown me over with a half of a breath. I you know, it was unbelievable, because it was mind-boggling to think that he had, number one, made up a language, and number two, that he'd added, you know, created a name, you know, to it. It wasn't like Spanish or English or German. It was clappish. And I asked him, I said, why did you do that? And he says, I didn't like all the noise.
He didn't like all the noise?
I'm sorry, he did. He didn't like all of the noise. And it still breaks my heart today.
And what was the noise?
Well, that was what I had to really deal with, because I thought, okay, how many times did I say, Tanner, can you hear me? Earth to Tanner, are you there? Mm-hmm. You know, just this constant, and it was abusive. You know, when looking back on it now, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, what a horrible parent I was.
Oh,
because I would get so angry.
But you weren't a horrible parent. You were like anybody else who felt like their child wasn't listening to them and wanted to get their attention. But I guess for him, it was just sensory overload probably, and he just kind of shut down.
Right, exactly. And for him to create that language and then to tell me that he had to because of all the noise, I mean, it broke my heart. I mean, it truly broke my heart. And, you know, and that was kind of a big changing kind of a day. That was a breakthrough day. And we've had several breakthrough days. But that particular breakthrough day, I told him, I says, well, Tanner, not when he told me about Clappish, but the day when I told him we were going to have warthog sandwiches, I said, Tanner, I said, you can't have a warthog sandwich unless you can say warthog. And it was so funny because here's little Oliver, who is barely a year old, and who's talking up a storm, and he goes over, come on, Tanner, you can do it. You can do it, Tanner. I'll help you. Come on. And it was so cute, and it was sort of a role reversal. It was very strange because little Oliver, you know, was little. He was the leader, and he was going to grab his big brother by the hand, and he was going to help him do it. And most of the time, he still does. I mean, they're still brothers, but it's a real interesting thing because we turned it into a game, and we now call it the hint game, and we play this game every week. Every time we're having to wait, if we're waiting in line, if we're driving to grandma's, whatever, can we play the hint game? And the hint game has gone so far to the point now that if it's my turn, I'll say, okay, I'm thinking of an animal that is black and white and has a long, long, long snout. Well, that's an easy one. It's a tapir. But, I mean, easy for my boys. Would not have been easy for most people. But then whoever guesses it gets to say, okay, I need a category. And I will tell him arachnids or rainforest or Serengeti or any animal in the world.
Sorry.
And I can guarantee you right now, these boys have an animal for you.
Well, I'm just thinking, you know, okay, he's going to be on Jeopardy and win millions of dollars one day, right?
Well, you know, it's scary. I mean, it is scary. I mean, to think that a 9-year-old and a 12-year-old are experts in arachnids and insectivores and omnivores and carnivores and, you know, and I mean, and their memories are amazing. I have to cheat sometimes because I have to look up in a book or look on the computer and get prepared before we're going to play a game so that I'm ahead of the game, or at least I'm trying to be ahead of the game, and I can't even hardly compete with them anymore. And I'm the one that started the game. You know, you'd think I should be the winner, but no, that's just not the way it works.
Well, you know, Rhonda, we're adults. We don't really know anything.
I know. You know, I learned everything I needed to know in kindergarten kind of thing. You know, and it's really true. But see, the thing of it is this expert status of these boys is absolutely mind-boggling. I mean, I have people constantly telling me, oh, well, what would Tanner think about this? Or what would Oliver think about that? And, you know, and there's really nothing that could be greater than that as their mother, you know, to have that kind of, you know, question asked mm-hmm. to me rather than how is your son doing with his therapy now or, you know, whatever.
Right.
And I'm just doing everything I can to help as many parents jump on the same boat we're on because it's
sure.
it's just not any fun.
Oh, I understand, but I mean that's where your book really hits home for a lot of people, I'm sure, to again normalize it for them. But I have a listener question. We have listeners emailing questions that they have for upcoming guests, and one of them was, I read recently that up to 500,000 young people under the age of 21 have autism, and many of which were never diagnosed with the disorder. What is your advice for parents and individuals who may need help in determining if they or their child have this condition? What would you suggest, Rhonda?
I would suggest, first of all, I have this three-step outlook. First of all, understand what autism is. It's not the end of the world. It's not a death sentence. It is an autoimmune disorder. Number two, detoxify your body, because the reason that you've got this disorder is because of a toxic overload somewhere in your body. Is it that you're reacting to wheat or dairy or food coloring or medical toxins of some kind? Did you have a disposition set up genetically? Almost all of us do, I hate to say that. But step two would be to detoxify your body. And you can, I've got all of the steps in my book, and I'm not trying to do a shameless plug for my book, but I've got all of the steps in my book on how to determine what you're toxic to. And I'm sure that there's a lot of things online that can help you too. I think it's more concise in my book because I truly do have everything that worked for us. And you can go on my website, autismwithrhonda.com, and see if you can find the information you need there. The third step that I would do is I would build up your immune system. And I know with my son, we had tried just everything known to man except for known toxins or mind-altering drugs. I was not going to give him drugs. For 7 years, we did everything we possibly could, and we discovered the ultimate immune builder, I'm calling it that, in October of 2008. He started taking it in December of 2008, and he was better in 7 weeks than anything we had done in 7 years. And I think that is the supplement, and I'm not, again, trying to promote that, but I would recommend it to anybody. Mm-hmm. And I have all that information in my book deck. I have an entire chapter dedicated. It's called Max GXL Glutathione Accelerator.
Now, you said Max GSL?
Max, M-A-X-G-X-L.
Oh, XL.
Glutathione Accelerator. And, you know, as soon as you say glutathione, about 90% of the people are going to say, well, what the heck is glutathione? And Dr. Oz has done several programs on glutathione real recently, and there's 94,000 PubMed reports on glutathione. Glutathione is our body's antioxidant, antitoxin. It's what our immune system is dependent on to be healthy, and we actually make it. We make it in our liver. So, you know, if you think back to what I was talking about earlier, if your liver is suppressed, oh my gosh, I mean, you're in trouble, and you really do want to build, you want to protect your liver. And then there's what's called the gut-brain connection. If your lower intestines and your gut is in trouble, it will not be long before your brain's in trouble too. So you want to really focus on keeping yourself as healthy as possible. But to learn more on the glutathione, because it's really something everybody should know about, I have a website, and it's called max.com and then /158429. And, of course, as soon as you hear the number, you're like, oh, my goodness, what is that? What it is this product is direct sales. And I wanted no part of anything that was direct sales except for the fact this product. I want everything to do with this product. And so I became what's called an associate a month after my son, and what's wild is 9 months after he started taking it, he no longer qualified for services at school. And 4 months after he started taking it, my pediatrician started taking it too.
Wow.
And my pediatrician has told me, quote unquote, this is the product.
Well,
so
it's. And if it works for you, then that is fabulous. That is fabulous if it works.
Exactly. You know, because you don't waste your time or your money on something that you're not seeing and feeling results on, you know, but those three steps, you know, understand what it is, detoxify your body, build up your immune system at any age, no matter what age you're at. That is what I would do.
And no matter what disorder you have, if any, it's always good to build up your immune system. Yeah,
exactly. Well, because see, really and truly, everything begins technically everything begins with some sort of stress, oxidative stress, you know, it's some kind of stress, but it goes to your immune system that, you know, because your immune system is trying to keep everything in balance, and you heal that immune system. And I mean, imagine if you have a healthy immune system that's going to lead straight up to your brain, healthy brain.
Sure.
Well, you know, it's not rocket science. It's right. It's going to be kind of a domino effect that literally has to help whatever you're dealing with. And
I'm sure it's all the supplements that helped your son Tanner, along with all the social skills training you gave him and the play therapy you gave him and all, you know, those developmental approaches that you helped build up with him and finding that his niche and what he does really well, all that combined has really helped carry your son to the next level of his life.
Absolutely, right, absolutely. But I'll tell you something, if the digestive system is not healthy, if you're suffering from bloating and constipation and diarrhea and inability to put on weight, all these things that these little kids typically are suffering from, then it doesn't really matter what supplements you give them. It doesn't really matter what food you give them. If their body isn't able to absorb the good stuff you're putting in there, you may as well be giving them water because it's going to just go through their system like water. And we didn't know that. We figured that out the hard way with Tanner. He, at 50, or at 8 years old, he only weighed 50 pounds. And you know those cute little pants where they've got the elastic little cinch, you know, that you can tighten them up?
Oh, sure.
It was on the last button. They still were falling off. But, you know, he's put on 20 pounds, you know, in 2 years. But it's one of those things. I tell people, really pay attention.
Right.
And, you know, do the poop check. If they've got whole food, pieces of whole food going through their bowel movements, then they're not digesting their food.
Yeah, and we're getting ready to run out of time here in a minute, and I wanted to get back to another listener question I had for you, if that's okay with you.
Oh, sure. You want to digress off of poop?
Yes,
no, I'm
kidding. Well, some people may be eating lunch right now.
Oh, yeah.
Well, another question is, it says, I'm one of 5 psychologists in a family practice in Seattle. We have an increased number of parents with autistic children seeking help, and we have added to our services and referrals to local autism support groups. And what is your experience with these groups, if any, and can you comment on the criteria parents should use in reaching out for help but who are not seeking professional help?
Oh, that's a great question. Oh, and that is, like, so sincere. I travel all over the country. I'm going to be, here and there and everywhere. And I think that every group that I've spoke to, every group I've attended, one bottom thing that really needs to happen is you have to understand that each child is so unique and so different, and you have to understand how they think. The overwhelming sensory overload, whether it's to the noise or the temperature in the room or the touch or the interaction, you know, too much, too fast, all these things, I think that the group needs to really focus on the individual, but at the same time focus on helping that individual to be a part of a team somehow, whether it's riding horses or picking flowers or planting a garden or painting a mural. And I really like to combine things together. I've done a lot of things with kids, you know, especially the younger ones, where we will go, and this is a really fun thing, you can go to a newspaper, and they almost always have the web press print, and ask them for a roll-in. And you'll get, I'm serious, like 50 or 60 yards of paper on this roll-in, and unlimited amounts of paper make up a huge ball, a bowl of pudding. Let the kids paint with the pudding on this paper. You know, have some sensory stuff going on with the kids. Whatever you decide to do, make it be about the kids. And another thing I like to do is I like to cook. Well, I say cook when it's really a non-cook form of granola bars. I make granola bars with kids and adults together. I think the more that the kids are included with even just the littlest things, the more they're going to feel like they are a part of their world, because they're so separated.
Yes.
And I hope I kind of touched on what they were looking for. If they're responding back to that, I'm happy to. And they can Anybody, you can send me an email, Rhonda@autismwithrhonda.com. I will do my very best to respond to everybody today, but if not today, within the next, today or tomorrow.
Well, Rhonda, I really appreciate that. I was just going to ask you, how can they get a hold of you if they wanted more information? Like you said, www.autismwithrhonda.com. Our guest today is Rhonda Spellman, and thank you so much for joining us today and talking somewhat about autism and your new book, The Journey Home from Autism, that was published just a few months ago last year in 2010. I would love to have a chance to talk with you in the future a little bit more, but we are running out of time. So on behalf of Alan, thank you so much for joining us today. And thank you at home for listening. And remember, as Alan says, try to seek somebody doing something good. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio.